Bean just didn't get it. He didn't feel that way about anybody. You just live in the place you're in. You don't worry about where you used to be or where you wish you were. Here is where you are, and here's where you've got to find a way to survive. And lying in bed boo-hooing doesn't help much with that. No problem, though. Their weakness just puts me farther ahead. One less rival on my road to becoming a commander. Is that how Ender Wiggin thought about things? Bean recalled everything he had learned about Ender so far. The kid was resourceful. He didn't openly fight with Bonzo, but he didn't put up with his stupid decisions either. It was fascinating to Bean, because on the street the one rule he knew for sure was, you don't stick your neck out unless your throat's about to be slit anyway. If you have a stupid crew boss, you don't tell him he's stupid, you don't show him he's stupid, you just go along and keep your head down. That's how kids survived. When he had to, Bean had taken a bold risk. Got himself onto Poke's crew that way. But that was about food. That was about not dying. Why did Ender take such a risk when there was nothing at stake but his standing in the war game? Maybe Ender knew something Bean didn't know. Maybe there was some reason why the game was more important than it seemed. Or maybe Ender was one of those kids who just couldn't stand to lose, ever. The kind of kid who's for the team only as long as the team is taking him where he wants to go, and if it isn't, then it's every man for himself. That's what Bonzo thought. But Bonzo was stupid. Once again, Bean was reminded that there were things he didn't understand. Ender wasn't doing every man for himself. He didn't practice alone. He opened his free time practice to other kids. Launchies, too, not just kids who could do things for him. Was it possible he did that just because it was a decent thing to do? The way Poke had offered herself to Ashiel in order to save Bean's life? No, Bean didn't know that's what she did. He didn't know that's why she died. But the possibility was there, and in his heart he believed it. That was the thing he had always despised about her. She acted tough, but she was soft at heart. And yet, that softness was what saved his life. And try as he might, he couldn't get himself to take the too-bad-for-her attitude that prevailed on the street. She listened to me when I talked to her. She did a hard thing that risked her own life on the chance that it would lead to a better life for all her crew. Then she offered me a place at her table, and in the end, she put herself between me and danger. Why? What was this great secret? Did Ender know it? How did he learn it? Why couldn't Bean figure it out for himself? Try as he might, though, he couldn't understand Poke. He couldn't understand Sister Carlotta either. Couldn't understand the arms she held him with, the tears she shed over him. Didn't they understand that no matter how much they loved him, he was still a separate person, and doing good for him didn't improve their lives in any way? If Ender Wiggin has this weakness, then I will not be anything like him. I am not going to sacrifice myself for anybody. And the beginning of that is that I refuse to lie in my bed and cry for Poke floating there in the water with her throat slit, or boo-hoo because Sister Carlotta isn't asleep in the next room. He wiped his eyes, rolled over, and willed his body to relax and go to sleep. Moments later, he was dozing in that light, easy-to-rouse sleep. Long before morning, his pillow would be dry. He dreamed, as human beings always dream, random firings of memory and imagination that the unconscious mind tries to put together into coherent stories. Bean rarely paid attention to his own dreams, rarely even remembered that he dreamed at all. But this morning he awoke with a clear image in his mind. Ants, swarming from a crack in the sidewalk. Little black ants, and larger red ants doing battle with them, destroying them. All of them scurrying, none of them looking up to see the human shoe coming down to stamp the life out of them. When the chute came back up, what was crushed under it was not ant bodies at all. They were the bodies of children, the urchins from the streets of Rotterdam, all of Achille's family. Bean himself. He recognized his own face rising above his flattened body, peering around for one last glimpse at the world before death. Above him loomed the shoe that killed him. But now it was worn on the end of a bugger's leg, and the bugger laughed and laughed. Bean remembered the laughing bugger when he awoke, and remembered the sight of all those children crushed flat, of his own body mashed like gum under a shoe. The meaning was obvious. While we children play at war, the buggers are coming to crush us. We must look above the level of our private struggles and keep in mind the greater enemy. Except that Bean rejected that interpretation of his own dream the moment he thought of it. Dreams have no meaning at all, he reminded himself. And even if they do mean something, it's a meaning that reveals what I feel, what I fear, not some deep abiding truth. So the buggers are coming. So they might crush us all like ants under their feet. What's that to me? My business right now is to keep Bean alive, to advance myself to a position where I might be useful in the war against the buggers. There's nothing I can do to stop them right now. Here's the lesson Bean took from his own dream. Don't be one of the scurrying, struggling ants. Be the shoe.